And amongst us honourable members, let me not exclude Team Treasury. We have amongst the team members, we have the DDG for Intergovernmental Relations, Mayor Maddy Jane Naleni, and we also have the, I hope the information that I have is correct. We also have Ms. Nompumelelo Khadebe, who will be leading the team on the presentation of the adjustment appropriations bill. Am I correct? Okay. I saw the hand. Oh, Mampo, do you want to speak now or are you indicating that you are here also?
I'm indicating I'm here, Chair, and I'll be leading the team from the appropriation bill. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mema Mudise. Honorable members, I think also I need to welcome, I'm just assuming that Dr. Janji and his team from PDO are here. So as FFC and SALGA. Are they here, Lubabalo? If they are here, you are welcome, colleagues. But before I forget, honorable members, I would like to welcome members on the platform, members of the civil society and the public at large, and our most important stakeholder, media. You're welcome on the platform in the meeting to be able to observe and also to report on what the discussions were. I also want to thank everybody for availing yourselves. Honorable members, I'm not going to waste time. Can I ask Lubabalo to flag the agenda, please? And whilst he's doing that, honorable members, let me request honorable members from, actually before that, all members on the platform and colleagues, as and when you speak, please, you are requested to switch your video on, please, for the smooth running of the meeting and the responsibilities that the communications of Parliament is supposed to do, and also responding or doing what is expected of us as public reps. I will request provinces, I will call you alphabetically, honorable members, as and when you confirm your availability, please, I'll do that roll call, switch on your video. Eastern Cape, who do we have? Is it the chair or the member? The portfolio committee. Eastern Cape.
Hello, Chairperson.
We don't have anyone from Eastern Cape. Hello, we have. Yes.
I have an apology, Chairperson, for Chairperson Honorable Luana from the Eastern Cape Chair. I thought I was going to deal with it under apologies, but. Because you're constantly like calling Eastern Cape, so I thought I must jump in and address so I may not keep quiet.
Okay, we'll deal with it under apologies, but thank you for indicating. Free State? Gauteng is always present.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. My name is John Nzani, coordinator for Finance Portfolio Committee in Gauteng. We are currently in a meeting. However, the chair will join as soon as we are done. We should be done in the next 10 minutes or so. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. You are also welcome. Don't leave the meeting when the chairperson comes in, joins. You are welcome to be part of the meeting. KZN? Is this KZN?
Good afternoon, Chair. It's Francois Rogers from KZN. I'm not sure where KK, our chairperson, is.
Okay, you are the member, it's fine. You can check on him or her if he or she is going to join the meeting. Thank you, you're welcome. Limpopo? There's no one from Limpopo. Mpumalanga?
Good afternoon or good evening, Honorable. You have got Makaringe Million, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. Northern Cape? North Cape?
Chairperson?
Yes, madam.
Sorry, Chairperson, the CC style speak. Oh, I think the committee coordinator from Northern Cape, she has sent an apology from the chairperson, Honorable Maneng, but there is a member on the platform from Northern Cape, Honorable Dichaba.
Yeah, I wanted members to confirm, but it's fine. We should know each other. If the chairperson is not there or you are with the chairperson, please indicate. Let's see each other. At least there's someone from Northern Cape, Northwest.
Good afternoon, Chair. Honorable Motswana from the Northwest, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Very consistent. Thank you, Honorable Motswana. Western Cape. Western Cape. No one from Western Cape. I'm under the impression that honorable members will still be joining the meeting because some are still held up in other meetings. Can we go to apologies and flag the agenda again, please? Do we have apologies?
Yes,
honorable,
yes, yes, yeah, I'm going to deal with them now. I'm just trying to flag the agenda. Then I'm going to. Or you want me to deal with the apologies first before flagging the agenda, Chair?
Apologies first, please.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chairperson. From the committee side, Chairperson, we don't have any apologies, Chair. There are only two apologies that we received, as I indicated earlier on, from Honorable Luana from the Eastern Cape, Chair, and also Team FFC. They indicated that today they've got a strategic planning session, Chairperson. They won't be able to join, but some members of the team accepted the invitation. So I'm sure maybe if they have got an opportunity, they might join us, Chairperson. But Dr. Brown indicated that FFC might not be able to join us because of the strategic planning session.
Okay, and we also note the apology by Honorable Karim. Honorable Detoit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, yes, I just wanted to welcome Honorable Nell from Northwest and Honorable Weber from Mpumalanga, the committee members, to this meeting. Thank you.
Honorable who from Mpumalanga?
Honorable Weber, Werner Weber.
Why are you selective and only welcome them?
They are proudly representing Freedom Front Plus, Chair.
I know. Don't do that. Don't come with the foreign tendencies, Honorable Dudoit. You don't do that. We work as a team.
We have reason to be proud. We have reason to be proud.
No, we welcome everybody. You are all welcomed.
And we
don't bring politics to the committee, so don't let us not spoil what we have. And I will appreciate, Honorable Member, that you don't talk over me or talk over any other member. Honorable Titoiti understands how we run this committee. We run this committee as a team. Having said that, all of you honorable members, once more, you're welcome. I will step to the next item of the day on the agenda, which is item 3, briefing by National Treasury on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. That is B19-2021. Team Treasury, is it Memudise?
Madjeng. So, Madjeng will start, and okay. Then I will hand over to Dr. Mudise. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair, and Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of this committee. I am hoping that the presentation is going to be flight. Who is giving me the presentation?
Good afternoon, DJ. I'm ready to flag the presentation, but one of the team members had indicated that he was going to assist, but I don't have a problem with respect to assisting DJ. I'm sorry for that slight delay.
Okay, it is there.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and everybody who is in the platform today. So we are briefing you on the Division of Revenue Adjustment Bill. So we will have a brief presentation that I will be assisted by Letsepa Pakisi and Bongani Daga, who are in the platform, but we also have other members of the team like Wendy Fane, Jan Hatting, who will also be part of the discussions whenever that is necessary. So the way the presentation is structured, we are going to give you an overview of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, focusing on changes on allocations, changes to provinces, and changes to allocations to local government, and changes to conditional grant frameworks. I will also reflect a bit on the Division of Revenue arising from the MTPPS 2022. So what we are going to be indicating here is what we have changed. So if you remember when the minister tabled the Division of Revenue Bill in February, he tabled the bill together with explanatory memorandum and grant frameworks. So when the president signed that into an act in June 2021, and the gazettes were separated from the bill, and we had to gazette the grant frameworks later on. So what we are going to reflect now is adjustment to that act that was signed into law, because there has been changes that arise from the adjustment that have been made in terms of Section 32 of the PFMA. Next slide. So what we are reflecting here is really also just to remind you on how we reflect on the changes. So in February, Schedule 1, in the first table, we reflected a schedule with three columns. The column 1 was reflecting the allocations in the current year that's going to be in the appropriations. And then there would be two-year forward allocations. So in reflecting the adjustment estimates, we then kind of expand column 1, the table below, that will then reflect what was the allocations originally, and the next one reflects how much are we adding or subtracting, and the next one shows total allocations now after adjustment. So this is purely just to make sure that the whole thing is transparent. Then we are also going to reflect on the schedules, on all the schedules, that's how it's going to be reflected.
So the next parts, Letsepa will continue quickly on the changes on provincial, Bongani, on the changes in the provincial allocations. Thank you, Chair.
Good evening, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues, and everyone in the meeting. My name is Bongani Dag.
Bongani, please open your video.
My video is on, Chair, from my side. I don't know if I'm showing.
No, it's not showing here, but you can continue. I think it will show because I don't see, I only see your name.
Apologies about that, Chair. Okay. I'll be presenting on the changes in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, looking specifically at the changes to the provincial sphere. In terms of, there was money that was added of 14.7 billion. That was added as a result of the agreement of the wage bill to assist provinces to deal with that wage agreement. We do note that this money has been added through the provincial equitable share. However, we do note that there are components of compensation of employees in the conditional grants. And given that when determining this amount, it was determined on the headcount in the provinces, supplement any shortfalls in the COE in conditional grants, given that this funding is enough for all the COE in the provinces. And as a result of the COVID and hence the lockdown, there were the Minister of Finance during the main budget indicated that there was 11 billion that was set aside for the public employment program, and funding has been approved for in terms of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative. Please go to the next slide. In terms of the funding that has been approved, there are three amounts that are approved through the provincial equitable share and one amount approved through the conditional grant. For the education sector, there is an amount of 6 billion that has been approved through the equitable share, and this is for the schools, public ordinary schools and public special schools to hire education assistants and general assistants, and then the schools will be the ones that are appointing these assistants in line with the duties that they want these assistants to perform in schools. And then for the health sector, there is an amount of 350 million that has been added for the equitable share. And then this one is to employment of nurses and assistant nurses to do their current duties and also to assist in responding to the COVID-19. And the other amount that has been approved through the provincial equitable share is for the social development sector, where 120 million has been added, and this is for contracting of social workers as part of the short-term response to the unemployment amongst the social workers. And then the amount that has been approved through the conditional grant is for the early childhood development, whereby 178 million has been added, and this is to provide the unemployment support for the 70,000 workers who are already in the early childhood development sector that were impacted by the COVID. We can go to the next slide, please. So there are funds that were previously approved through the budget facility for infrastructure. And given the delays that have happened in those projects, the project sponsors have requested that we reduce the allocations for this year, given that they will not be able to spend fully the amounts that were allocated for the current financial year. And to that effect, there is an amount of 150 million that is being reduced for Limpopo Academic Hospital due to the delays that have been experienced in the project. And then this reduction is done through the National Health Insurance Indirect Grant. And also there is an amount of 10 million for the Klipfontein Hospital in Western Cape that is being reduced due to the delays in the appointment of professional service providers for the design of the building. And then this money is being reduced through the Health Facility Revitalization Grant. I think now you have moved on to other slides. Yes, I'm still on that slide. Thank you very much. And then in terms, there was a rollover for the school infrastructure backlog grant, whereby 210 million was rolled over. And this is for the completion of projects that are part of the sanitation appropriate for education. And then this rollovers are done for the Eastern Cape, Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. And then also there is a reprioritization that has also been done in the school infrastructure backlog grant, where 98 million has been reprioritized from the goods and services portion allocated to the National Department of Basic Education for planning and oversight of the grant, where there were savings as a result of the COVID-19 restriction. And these funds will be used by the National Department of Basic Education to fund a shortfall in the workbooks program, where there is an increased demand for the language, maths, and life skills workbooks provided to the public schools. Now, given that learners are expected to work on their own from home, as many schools are using a rotational timetable to allow for the required social distancing. And then in terms, there was also a reprioritization that has been made for the medical interns, wherein 243 million has been reprioritized from the various components within the National Health Insurance Grant. And this reprioritized money is going to the Health Human Resource and Training Grant, which is used for the hiring of medical interns. This is as a result of the higher than expected number of medical interns that have completed their studies and need to be placed. We can go to the next slide, please. So in terms, the provinces have demonstrated that they are able now to take on the medical health and oncology services. And as a result of that, there are funds that are being converted from the National Health Insurance Indirect Grant. They are being converted to the HIV, TB, malaria, and community outreach grant. And the amount being converted is 167 million. So this will allow provinces to procure for the mental health and oncology services directly. So in terms of when the Minister of Finance was gazetting the parts of the bill in terms of Section 15 of the Division of Revenue Act, there are two departments in the Northern Cape that were gazetted as two separate departments. However, subsequent to the gazettes being made, we were made aware that the two departments have been merged. So here for the under the public works program, all we are doing is that we are correcting for the name, whereby we are only substituting those two departments with the one new newly formed department. Then I will hand over to my colleague, Letsepa Pakis, to take, this slide is only showing the impact of the, like, the net changes of the conversions, additions that I spoke to earlier, whereby the equitable share is seeing a net increase of 21 billion and the direct conditional grants is seeing the net change of 579 million. So next slide, please. Next slide, please. Yes, now I'll be handing over to Letsepa Pakis to take the committee through the changes to the local government. Thank you, members and the chair.
Thanks, Bongani. Good afternoon, honorable members. Good afternoon, honorable chairperson, colleagues, members of the media. I will be taking you through all the changes in the local government allocations. And to start off with, there is a reduction of 1.3 billion in the public transport network grant. Really, this reduction was as a result of the city indicating to us that in terms of their cash flow, the amount that they are able to spend this financial year, which is the 2021-22, is in excess of that amount. So we have agreed with the city that this 1.3 billion will then be reduced from their baseline. And however, it's not going to affect the projects in within the city related to the My City public transport network, but then that these funds are merely being rescheduled to a later financial year when the city is able to spend. There was also another addition to the to the tune of 81.3 million. This amount was added to the regional park infrastructure grant to George Municipality. And this is really to then assist in funding the portable water security and remedial works project in the city. Another addition that was made to the local government allocation relates to the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention, where we are seeing an addition of 841 million to the neighborhood development grant. Really, this allocation is to assist the cities to upscale their public employment programs so that they can cater for job creation, which really would assist in these cities also in terms of being able to get an additional source of revenue if there are more people that can now afford the services. We are also reporting a reprioritization within the neighborhood development and partnership grant. Really, this reprioritization is as a result of some of the projects in some municipalities. For instance, in the Western Cape, the city of Cape Town. So there were about four projects with 50 million that couldn't take place as planned due to some of the disruptions in the plans that the city had. And instead of then really losing those funds at the end of the financial year, there was an agreement with the program managers that these funds can be reduced from their baseline so that they can assist the program to be able to roll out some of the projects in other less capacitated municipalities where it's providing technical support. And again, honorable members, colleagues, and the members of the media, it's worth mentioning that these funds are not lost from these municipalities. They are merely being rescheduled. So I think the move now is just to ensure that when the municipalities are unable to spend the funds, so they are able to come up front and indicate as such so that for the other municipalities where there are projects that can be done, they can be then rolled out. And then they would then receive the funding for those projects that have stalled at a later date. Honorable members, I think the issue of the Vaal River has really received some much needed attention, and through the ARPIC indirect grant, there is a rollover that is made to the tune of 582 million to really assist in the operational payments for the pollution remediation project in the Emfuleni municipality. And these funds, honorable members, are funds that were committed by the end of the financial year, but there were no payments that were made in time before the end of the national financial year. The slide, honorable members, really just speaks to the changes that I've spoken to. As you can see, the biggest adjustment is the one in the public transport network grant, which is the tune of 1.3, which I've spoken to, which relates to the change there, or the rescheduling of the allocation to the city of Cape Town. And the net change, honorable members, to the allocations to local government is that increase of 165 million. If we can move to the next slide. Yes, I think this slide is, honorable members, this is just a preamble of why we do and make the changes that we do. So in terms of section 15 of the Division of Revenue, for any changes in terms of correcting for errors and omissions in the frameworks, we are obligated to present those to you and also indicate that you consider and approve those corrections so that we can then, as the Treasury, once the bill has been enacted, those changes. And in my next slide, honorable members, and colleagues, I'm just going to talk to the specific frameworks where there were changes that we had to make. The first one is really the Integrated Urban Development Grant. So this grant is a grant that goes to a selected number of municipalities and has a closer relationship, really, in terms of management with the municipal infrastructure grant. So we do try as much as possible to align any of the reforms that are being done between these two grants. So currently in the MIG, we have a provision for the purchasing of special vehicles for waste management. However, we didn't have this provision in the Integrated Urban Development Grant. So the change is also to then include this provision so that the municipalities that are moving from the Municipal Infrastructure Grant are able to then continue to enjoy the benefit of this provision in terms of being able to purchase the special vehicles for waste management. The other amendment really that was made was just an oversight on our side where we had missed indicating that the baseline allocation in the MIG was 14.8 billion in the 1920 financial year. And instead of putting that amount there, we had put an X, and that's an error that we are correcting for now, just to reflect the correct amount that was spent in the MIG in the 1920 financial year. Then there are two amendments, honorable members, colleagues, and the members of the media, that related to the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant. The honorable members would remember that there is an additional allocation that was made for the PEP project, and as a result of that, there then was a need to then amend some of the conditions so that they can now speak to the employment program and specifically the job creation component of it. And the other amendment, honorable members, was then really just to remove reference, to the submission of the built environment performance plans. Honorable members would remember that this has been a standing requirement in a number of conditional grants that go to the metros. But since incorporation of these plans into the normal plans that the cities have, this was never supposed to be here. So we are just removing that part as well. And then in terms of the regional bulk infrastructure grant, the honorable members and colleagues would remember that I had spoken to an additional allocation that goes to George Municipality, which is funded through the BFI. So as I think as to align this BFI funding with the provisions that are made in the ARB grant, there was a need to then specify some of the conditions that are additional to what the normal Arabic grant would entail. And this really would then start speaking to the cost-benefit analysis that is required. And as the BFI is quite big in terms of co-funding arrangements, so it was also to just ensure that those have been signed with other co-funding agreements. So whether be it if they have their co-funding agreement with other grants like the MIG, but also ensuring that, you know, the city is also able to bring its own a funding source to the forum. That's next slide. Those are the only changes, honorable members, in terms of the frameworks. And now to the division of revenue as presented in the MTBPS. The honorable members would then perhaps be reminded that, you know, government stance on fiscal consolidation remains. So there aren't any strong additions that have been made to the baselines. And in fact, a national government's allocation declines by 1.8% over the 22 MTF. But I think in the local government space, we're quite happy because we're seeing a healthy growth in terms of local government allocations, an increase of 4.1%. And it's also good that there are no spending reductions that have been proposed thus far. If you look at what was presented in the 2021 MTBBS as well. But then in terms of the specific changes, if you compare the 2021 division of revenue and this 2022 division of revenue, we're seeing quite a healthy growth addition there in terms of the allocation to the provinces, which increased by 15.7 billion. And then the relative change in terms of the indicative allocation location from the 2021 budget for local government really indicates an increase of about 1 billion there. But I think the honorable members would know that the government continues to be worried about the debt service cost, which continues to increase. I think there's commitment to then have that in check. In terms of the shares, local government still gets a lower share in terms compared to the other two spheres of government, but we're seeing a growth there from 9.3 in 2022-23 to 9.7 over the 2024-25 financial year. There's also a shift of about 1.7 billion from national to provincial roads maintenance grant in the coming financial year in the proposed allocation for the 2022-23. And there's also some reprioritization really to the tune of 15 million, 20 million and 30 million in the MTF from the PRMG to the Department of Transport to then fund the central data collection systems. Next slide. I will then hand over back to Bongani, Honorable Chairperson, to take you through the changes in terms of the provincial, and then I'll come back later to speak to the local government phase. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Letsepa. Honorable Chair and honorable members of the committee, as you may be aware that We have been embarking on the review of the provincial equitable share, and we have just finished the review of the health component, whereby that is going to be implemented from 2022-23 financial year. And given the impact of the change of the review, there is going to be a special phase-in for 3 years, whereby we are going to phase in that impact of the change. The details of the review of the health component will be contained in the 2022 Division of Revenue Bill. And then there were two function shifts. There are two function shifts that are going to take place in the next budget cycle of the 2022-23 financial year, whereby there is a shift of agricultural colleges from provincial departments of agriculture to national. And just to indicate, this shift in function is going to have an impact on the comprehensive agriculture support program grant, but this grant is worth about 1.6 billion, but the funding for the agricultural colleges are only to the tune of about 98 million. So that is the only component within this grant that is going to be moved out. And then there's also a shift in the early childhood development, whereby this function is going to shift from the Department of Social Development to the Department of Basic Education. Next slide, please. So in terms, there is a restructuring of the grants whereby the health, TB, malaria, and community outreach grant is being restructured. The reason being, over the years, this grant, the National Department of Health has been adding components, and this grant had too many components. Now it's been restructured such that it only has two components, and it will be renamed the District Health Program Grant, whereby the two components are going to be the comprehensive HIV AIDS component and then the district health component. And then also just to note for the members that for this grant also, given as we indicated earlier when we were talking to the in-year changes, that oncology and mental health, the funding was going to be converted to the direct component. This services were funded also from this HIV TB grant and also from the indirect NHI. And those are going, both funding from those two grants are going to go to the direct NHI so that provinces can procure directly. And then also there is going to be further reprioritization from the National Health Insurance, as indicated previously, to enable for the hiring of medical interns. And this funding is going to be reprioritized to the human resource and training. And this is going to be done over the next MTEF. And then I think my colleague Letsepa has already covered this, whereby from the provincial road maintenance grant, we are going to take away the incentive from the baseline. This is due to the Department of Transport not having a criteria for allocating the incentive component. Members may be aware that for the past 2 to 3 financial years, this component, the incentive component, was allocated using the main PRMG formula, which was not correct. And then also the members indicated the dissatisfaction with this, hence the commitment for National Treasury to work together with the National Department of Transport to correct this. And then there's going to be a reprioritization of 65 million over the MTEF. And then this is for the system that is going to be used that collect data centrally. So that is for that purpose to add more modules to that system to allow for data collection for roads. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'll hand over to Letsepa Pakis to take us through the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Honorable Chair. So this slide really would start to speak to the changes that are proposed over the MTEF. And one is a change in the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, where DCOG is proposing repurposing the whole of the grant to support the district development model approach. It is important for the honorable members, the colleagues and the members of the media to note that already this grant is finding a lot of projects that are linked to the district development model. It's just to scale up now in terms of having those comprehensive institutional diagnostic assessments for the 52 districts and then also the development of those institutional improvements to support the plans. So there is not going to be much of a change in terms of what the grant was doing before, but now it is just to elevate it in terms of the DDM approach. We've also, I think, sometime last year, honorable member, spoken to you about an indirect component to be introduced in the MIC. An indirect component would then speak to a indirect grant, which would then be administered by a national Department of Cooperative Governance, which is meant to then assist in terms of improving efficiency in grant expenditure, specifically for those municipalities that are struggling to spend. So there are still some conversations that are being held between DCOG, SALGA, and ourselves in terms of coming up with the criteria of what in terms of the criteria that will be used to identify the municipalities that will form a part of this indirect component. And this is why, honorable members, we're not proposing that there be additions in terms of allocations made in the main budget, but that funds be converted in year once that has been, once the criteria has been determined and agreed upon. Also, honorable members would know that in terms of our commitment to try and create some incentives into the system, we have tried some financial incentives, and now we're also trying to introduce non-financial performance incentives in the system. So also within the municipal infrastructure grant, we want to introduce an incentive really in terms of creating also in year through the stopping and reallocation process that the National Treasury leads, where we're able to then identify some key variables really that would then be used to assist us in terms of specifically asset management value chain. How can we ensure that municipalities take asset management quite seriously? Because if we can really receive traction in terms of that, we think that, you know, we would really solve quite a number of issues at a municipal level that are related to infrastructure. But we will follow up with more comprehensive thinking around this in the when we provide the division of revenue bill earlier next day, honorable members. That is it from our side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Team Treasury. May Ngaleni and your team, thank you very much for the presentation. Lubabalo, can you help me identify members who want to speak to the presentations? Honorable members, please raise your hands. Honorable Detoit.
Honorable Moletsane.
Moletsane.
Honorable Karim.
Honorable Karim.
Honorable Okam.
Honorable Pilot. Honorable Okam.
Honorable Ryder.
Honorable Ryder. Fuleni, I heard they spoke of that. Honorable.
And Honorable Rogers.
Honorable Rogers. Who else?
So far, those are the six hands that have been raised, Chair Desim. Thank you. Over to your chair.
Honorable members, if you are struggling
I can be added, Chair. My apology.
Okay, Honorable Njatu, you are allowed to indicate now if you are struggling to raise your hand with your icon. Okay, those are the few hands. Honorable Detoit, the platform is yours. Can you start, please? Honorable Detoit.
Thank you, Chair. Let's try again. I want to thank National Treasury for the presentation. I've got 4 points or 4 pages which I want to refer to. Firstly, on page 8, the 243 million rand that's reprioritized for the shortfall of the placement of medical interns. Can we please be told if this includes interns that might be coming from Cuba, or is it only for South African students? I think it's necessary to know that. And then we're going to go to page 13, the rollover in the regional bulk infrastructure grant. This is good news, and I want to know what amount was on the initial wish list with regards to attending to the pollution situation in the Vaal River with this disaster that we are sitting with. Know that it's referred to that 582 million rand will be availed, but what's the actual amount that's needed? If National Treasury could please tell us. And then on page 17, the Integrated Urban Development Grant. I want to know if we could be told, I mean, we don't have a detailed report, if the JB Marks municipality is included in this. And then lastly, Chair, they are in the Northwest Province. Lastly, on page 24, the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, I think it's a great shock for the whole grant, 100% of it, to be allocated to the district development model. I mean, what's happened up to now, it's there's more than enough proof than amalgamated to show that amalgamated municipalities does not work, and making that footprint even wider will be detrimental to local municipalities in the country. If National Treasury could also speak to that matter, it would be appreciated. If something pops up in the meantime and I can be allowed a second bite, Chair, it will be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Detoit. I think we will try by all means to allow members to have
it's 18 hours
as more time as possible without really delaying. I think we usually give members second bites. The next one, Honorable Muletsani. Tate Muletsani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me acknowledge the presentation. My question is whether the sector department have submitted a plan to National Treasury to ensure that the 178 million added for the Early Childhood Development Grant to provide unemployment risk support to 70,000 early childhood development related workers impacted by the COVID-19 lockdown is used for the intended purpose. And I'm happy that they have even indicated that there's a migration, that the ECD will be migrating from the social development to the Department of Education. I want to believe that this is going to bring the solution because of the parity between the provinces. When you look at the stipend that they get at the end of the month between the Gauteng and the Free State is getting very little. When you compare Free State and the Eastern Cape, Free State is getting very little. So I hope that by migrating to education, the education will deal with with that parity of stipend that they get at the end of the month, so that they can be treated equally, they can earn equally, because they are doing the same job, they are reporting for same hours. Lastly, Chair, I've heard that there are some changes there and there of whereby they have increased some money in provinces in the local government. I want to remind the Treasury to say they need to revisit the distribution model. It needs to be revisited. It needs to be changed. It has been outdated. It is very important that they start thinking about looking at the distribution model to be upgraded. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Ntate Mletsane. Honorable Karim.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Look, obviously we all understand how perilous the situation is, how badly strained the budget is, not just COVID, but the July unrest extracted another 37 billion or so. So, you know, we're not like populists or anything, but I mean, in fairness, given COVID and given the parlous state of the health facilities we have, surely one should be very cautious about delaying more funds for health infrastructure and saying that it'll be revised and money allocated as the fiscal, as the, you know, cash flow allows. Now, you need badly maintenance of infrastructure, existing infrastructure, new infrastructure, and other health facilities. Now, obviously, they explained to us now that they're restructuring the health grant and so on. But, I mean, surely infrastructure is utterly crucial. If COVID-19 shown us anything, it is that our public sector health departments and hospitals, hospitals are in a very, very bad state. And they're going to challenge even more now with COVID surge number 4, likely to emerge, as we are told by the scientists in the department, in the next 2 weeks or so. So in short, I know there isn't money. We all do. But surely there are ways they can reprioritize. I mean, one of the things I have raised before, Chairperson, while being cautious, because I don't know enough. Maybe the researchers can help us. But I mean, Durco, for example, do we need so many missions aboard? Do we need so many staff there? I mean, is that a priority at the moment, really? I mean, our trade and investment links are utterly crucial, especially now with COVID. But, you know, beyond that, do we need staff? I mean, you and I and others have gone on many study tours over the years. We've gone to these embassies and high commissions. We've seen for ourselves the deluge of staff some of them have. It's not always clear what they're doing. So in short, Durco is an obvious example to look at. You know, I mean, why health infrastructure? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. The next is Honorable Okan.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, yeah, firstly, there's been a lot of allocations that has been done to various departments. We saw allocations towards the riots that happened in KwaZulu-Natal, and there's allocations to education and to health. My question is, firstly, what has been put in front of Treasury to make sure that the money that are allocated now for certain projects or for certain purposes are going to be spent on those for those purposes that it has been allocated for? We have too many times in the past seen that money has been allocated for something, but then it is spent on something else. We must make sure that it is spent on for the reasons that it has been given for. So my first question is, have there been put plans in front of Treasury to make sure that that will happen? Secondly, coming from the Northern Cape, again, We went through a long, prolonged drought in the Northern Cape, and recently we had enormous veld fires there. We have, on numerous occasions in the past, asked for additional funding for the Department of Agriculture in order to assist the farmers that are really struggling there. I don't see anything in there. I might have been mistaken. But my question is, what will be done in order to alleviate the problems that the farmers have got there? And obviously, in that way, also to secure our food sources in the Northern Cape. Then, Honourable Chairperson, with regards to the Integrated Urban Development Grant, that grant makes provision for the purchasing of vehicles. We also got a lot of other grants that help us to build a road, for instance. What measures are in place, or what funding are available for the continuous maintenance of vehicles, of water infrastructure, of roads that are being built, let's say, for example, by a migrant? What are they in place to make sure that maintenance of whatever is built or purchased are being done properly? Then a last question from my side. We know that there's quite a few, actually quite a lot of municipalities who misappropriate or misuse the money that has been appropriated to them. We know for a fact that there are municipalities that use the MIC grants that they get to, for instance, pay their electricity bills. Are there any municipalities that have received MIC grants, for example, and have misallocated them or misused those funds? And are they being penalized by getting less MIC grants or grants for those purposes due to the fact that they have misappropriated those funds? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Okam. Honorable Raila.
Thank you very much, Chair. My apologies. There's a massive storm here in Gauteng at the moment, and the electricity is off, so I'm not going to turn my camera on. And as a result of it, I've also missed some of the presentation. So please forgive me if I ask questions that have been covered already in the presentation. But there were some fairly alarming moves made or announced today. Obviously, we've seen the presentation before. But some of the moves are alarming in terms of what they're doing. And I think that Mr. Du Toit and Mr. Karim have both spoken partly to what I'm getting at. But let me start. Now, specifically, the move of the mental health and oncology grant to the from away from provinces to the National Treasury, to the National Department of Health, and application into the NHI is massively concerning to me, Chairperson, because we have seen that the NHI pilot projects have indicated that, you know, NHI is going to take a lot of work, a lot more work, a lot more funding than was initially anticipated. And it may not be a quick win that we were hoping that we were, that certain people were hoping it was going to be when they started with it. So, you know, I mean, if we sit with the centralization of the mental health budget in an NHI fund, are we going to find ourselves once again in a situation where there's insufficient money to be spent in the provinces on mental health patients, and we sit with another Life Isidimeni situation or something similar to that? You know, we cannot risk another one of those as a country, because to have the most needy people, the people in most need of government assistance, dying at the hands of bad policy rollouts, we can't afford that again. And the same goes with the oncology unit. You know, we've seen with the problems at Charlotte Maxeke Hospital, with the fire that was experienced, the backlogs in dealing with oncology in Gauteng have become extreme. So, you know, I think these are two very urgent, very important parts of the provincial health system. And if we're messing with them without having a very clear and distinct plan, we are putting lives at risk, Chairperson. And if this is a Treasury decision that's not being done in conjunction with the provinces, not being done properly in conjunction with the Department of Health, not being done properly with the inputs of the provincial health and finance departments, we're going to end up in serious trouble where Treasury is going to end up, I don't want to say with blood on their hands, but certainly having to answer questions that are really uncomfortable if policy decision has been taken that ends up costing lives. The next one that I want to point out, Chairperson, is taking money away from road repairs and putting it in office jobs. Now, the person that thought of that scheme sits in an office in Pretoria and has not driven around this country, as I'm sure, Chair, you have recently, and many of the other politicians in this meeting have done over the last couple of months. As we're driving on the provincial roads around the country, they are in a shocking, shocking state of disrepair. And if we're moving money away from actual roads repair and putting them into a computer system, well, you know what? The computer system might be very worthwhile and valid. But I really think that we need to seriously look at our priorities. Honorable Karim spoke about our infrastructure. Our infrastructure is looking in a sorry state. And if one just looks at the state of roads, and it has a direct impact on the economy, Chair. You know, when one looks at tourism, as you're driving through the Free State, going to that very nice wildlife reserve there, I've never been in, but I've driven past it. These days, you have to drive past it very slowly because of the number of potholes on the provincial roads. The same applies as well in provinces across the country where our provincial roads are looking in a very sorry, sorry state. I think moving funds away from actual road repair, from infrastructure maintenance, is a very, very dangerous thing to do at this stage. Chairperson, and then I want to agree with the fact that the district model has been an abject failure wherever it's been piloted, and throwing more money into that is problematic in my view, and clearly in the view of other members on this committee. And I think Treasury needs to motivate where that's coming from. I mean, the reality is that COGTA has a lot to answer for in terms of the failure of local government. The recent local government election results, the turnout figure, can be laid squarely at the feet of COGTA because they've allowed local government to deteriorate to a stage where our communities no longer trust local government. So, you know, and that falls directly under COGTA, and the upskilling of COGTA, of our councillors, sits with COGTA. That's the reality. And I mean, I know people tried to deflect the other day when I pointed this matter out in the House, but the reality is ultimately who's accountable is the minister. You can't say, well, you know, the councils are primarily responsible. That was what the deputy prince said to us in the House. No, the minister is accountable. That's why she earns the big bucks that she does. So taking money away from municipalities and putting it into the district model, I think is problematic. We still haven't seen how this is going to be rolled out properly. And if we're throwing money at a desperate time like this into a project that has been piloted and not successfully, I'm really worried. Chair, I'm extremely worried. These are just three of the issues, but the messages that Treasury is sending out through this this adjustment appropriation is very concerning. The last question I want to make, Chair, is that every year we see fiscal dumping taking place in the last 3 or 4 months, where housing budgets are shifted away from underperforming provinces and given to provinces that are performing. And I'd like to know, you know, have we taken preemptive moves here, or are we still going to see more fiscal dumping and a couple of last minute gazettes towards the end of the year because people haven't met their targets? Have we started to look already at who's not meeting their targets, who's not spending their allocations for this adjustment appropriation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Rogers, you next.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is a simple question and perhaps a selfish question because it deals with my province. But if I look at the additional allocations to provinces to deal with the wage agreement, Our midterm reflects that we're looking at about a 5 billion over expenditure on that wage agreement. And if I understand correctly, in terms of your new allocation, KZN will only get 4.4 billion. So if I can just get some confirmation that that is true, because overall our midterm sits at about a 7 billion rand projected over expenditure. So it creates certain headaches for us in the province of KZN. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Njatu.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Good afternoon. Afternoon to all the members. Honourable Chairperson, my point that I would want National Treasury believe that the MIG, the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, the changes that will be made in terms of the district development model, I think one is welcoming that and then believing that that infrastructure is the key in terms of service delivery. So one will want to see it in terms of the circular that will be coming maybe soon out in terms of that. And then my specific question, Honorable Chairperson, is on the 841 billion. The 841 billion that was added to the direct neighborhood development partnership, which also believe that that is a very key project program in terms of crime prevention, that one want to check whether the sector department, did they submit a plan to ensure that the jobs that have to be created in terms of indication tree created out of that 841 billion are utilized for its intended purpose? That is the question, Chair, in terms to National Treasury. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Njatu. I think for me, I'm covered by members on most of the issues that I wanted to raise, but I just want to put an emphasis on the issue of the plans, wanting to know that what informed the amounts that are allocated to the sector departments. Have they presented the plans, expenditure plans, or their plans to Treasury, so that you're able to monitor, we are able to monitor, and the provinces are able to monitor the expenditure and the money that is allocated is spent for the specific or the allocated or the planned project. And we don't see what we have seen during COVID-19, where money was misdirected. One will also want to know as to whether the conversation of the municipal infrastructure, the MIG, there's always been a problem in the MIG, where the MIG is being misdirected by the municipalities to an extent where MIG is used to pay salaries. It's not on. And I think it's related to what Honorable Ryder has raised, the fiscal dumping. You know, you just spend the money for the sake of dumping. And I think as this committee, we are having a responsibility to appropriate money to the municipalities and the provinces. But we also have a responsibility to follow up on those monies that have been allocated to the provinces and the municipalities. What we have seen also during the campaigns, where is something like a stadium which was supposed to be built was not built, or was something that is very embarrassing and insulting to the community, cannot be tolerated. And we are appealing to Treasury to also monitor. There should be value for money. Not that money should just be dumped and people should just spend money for the sake of spending it because it's there. So consequence management needs to be seen being practiced. We will not, as this committee, allow ourselves to be lashed by the public that we are not doing our responsibility. We are just agreeing and giving money to people who are irresponsible. The other question that I want to caution the Treasury and the sector departments and local government is that giving money should also talk to the implementers, the people, the kind of officials that we are having, whether they have the capacity. Those institutions that we are giving money to, are they having the relevant and sufficient capacity to can pull out or spend this money as expected? I'm going to now allow Maleni and the team to respond briefly, and we'll see thereafter if members need a second bite on the matters. Mengaleni?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. And indeed, the team will assist, and also Dr. Mampo's team, I think, will be able to assist on some of the questions. So I think that the biggest question that seems has been raised relates to the plans, whether we see plans that, particularly with regards to this public expenditure program. I think the questions were asked in regards to that, including what we are putting in the neighborhood development program, the 841 million. So what I want to assure members is, in this program, there has been quite an elaborate process, which Dr. Mampo can add, because she ran the process of evaluating, you know, the proposals and the plans. And there is a very elaborate monitoring system that is run by the program management unit in the presidency that is specifically monitoring this program. So I think that we are kind of have some assurance that there are plans and that there is a monitoring system and team that is actually dedicated towards ensuring that this money is actually spent for the purposes in which it is actually allocated. And I do think that they can also form part of informing members in terms of the outcomes of their monitoring system. So on the DDM, because that also came as a big question of funding DDM. So DDM is not about taking over and centralizing, consolidating municipalities. It is really about driving this coordination and alignment and ensuring that within the spaces, there is capacity to enable, you know, the planning and the coordination and the alignment across spheres of government that COGTA is actually driving. So it is really meant to still drive, ensure that there are systems in place that are enabling actually delivery in a much more integrated way into those spaces. So that is the reason. I don't think it has got anything to do with, you know, consolidating municipalities or centralizing, you know, municipalities. So the other question on the health, allocations, I think maybe we didn't communicate properly on that one, because I think that there's a good story, because we are actually shifting money from indirect NHI to direct, you know, HIV/AIDS grant and oncology, to actually enable provinces to directly procure those oncology services and mental health. So it is actually a good story that actually acknowledges that provinces are actually doing better when you compare with what national Navy is able to do. So that there is quite a lot of conversion of grants, indirect grants, to support provinces, either it's with the interns or with these oncology services. So I think that it's a good story, which I think the team can also emphasize on that one. So I will allow Wendy and the team maybe to add on those specific questions around the allocations that have been raised on the grants. Thanks.
Thank you. If I can ask Bongani to assist with the provincial questions, and then Letsepa to assist with the local government questions, and Ulrika to assist with the questions specifically related to the transport questions, and I'll deal with any of the questions that then fell through the cracks. Thanks. If we can start with Ulrika then. Thank you. Ulrika, over to you.
Is Ulrika on the platform?
I am, Chair. Sorry, I'm struggling to unmute and start my video.
Okay.
So just in relation to the Provincial Roads Maintenance Grant, the shift is really to get a central database that would allow provinces to make better decisions in their road asset management system. So how they collect the information, where that information does, allows us to then evaluate where the provinces are spending money efficiently and effectively, how they are prioritizing which roads they are being upgraded and which roads are being maintained in a way that would allow us to spend the money to get a bigger bang for our buck, for the lack of better phrase. Right now, we're seeing major inefficiencies within the system, and by moving, I think it's 65 million rand over 3 years in a 10 billion rand a year grant, is a small amount of money, and we're hoping that the efficiencies we get out of that would actually multiply the outcomes that we get from that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Who's next, Bongani? I don't know who comes after you, okay?
Thank you very much, Chair. So I will be responding to some of the provincial question. So there was a question asked about the money that was reprioritized of 243 million for the medical interns, whether it was for the medical interns from Cuba. Just to indicate, this money is for all the medical interns that are qualifying, because there are some that are from Cuba, some are from the universities in South Africa, and some are from other universities around the country. So as soon as they finish with their studies and they need to do the internship as part of their training, then they are also admitted into that program. And then the money for the ECD, whether that is going to be used for the intended purpose, this funding is going to be used for the workers that are already in the system, that have already been identified. So this money is to supplement their income. So that is going to be used for already people that are in the system. So in terms of the other question about the delays in the funding of the health facilities, just to indicate, those two amounts of 150 million for Limpopo Academic and 10 million for a hospital in the Western Cape, they were allocated specifically for those projects, because the funding that is approved through the budget facility for infrastructure is for a specific project. So now if those, for example, the Limpopo Academic Hospital is not able to spend this year, then that means that funding is going to be, given that the cost of the project is still the same, the funding is going to be added over the lifetime of that project based on the time period that was approved for this project. So the money is not lost. And then also to mention that it is the project sponsors that have requested that we reduce this funding because they said they will not be able to use this funding in this current financial year. So in terms of the other question, or Mema Dijeng has already responded to that, but it was about the shifting of money of oncology and mental services from provinces to national. What we are communicating is that the money is going the other way around, because in here there was funding that was an indirect grant. So what we are communicating is that that funding that was an indirect grant, we are of 167 million. We are moving it from the indirect National Health Insurance grant, and we are giving that money to provinces so that they can procure directly. Even over the MTEF, we are saying funding was available in the indirect NHI and also in the HIV TB. And we are saying those two fundings, we are putting them together into the direct National Health Insurance grant, whereby provinces will be able to procure directly for oncology and mental health.
My apologies, Chairperson and other members. But Bongani, can you please try and remove your background, because my colleagues who are broadcasting are complaining that you're not visible. I think you are much better now. I don't know what's happening. My apologies, Chairperson.
I was going to address it because I don't know what it is, and going to give him an advice going forward. Are you about to finish? Yeah, you are better now.
Yes, I'm about to finish.
Thank you, sir.
Can you continue? Finish.
The other one, it was about the KZN in terms of the funding that was added for the wage bill, and we do indicate, because we were requested to say how much has been added. It's 3 billion that was added to KZN, and then this is in line with the headcount, because in determining this allocation of 14.7 billion, all the provinces, the way that this money was calculated was based on the headcount and also looking at the salary levels for the number of people in each salary level. And then I think that is about it from my side. Others will be responded to by my colleagues. Thanks.
Can I then ask?
I think the problem was with your light, because as you finish speaking, it's only then that I can see you. So because your background was in front of you, we couldn't see you at all. So next time when you log in, please, I will advise you to log in earlier so that the broadcasting people can help you in terms of adjusting your screen. If you can pin yourself on the screen, you can see what I'm talking about. Wendy?
Can I then hand over to Letsepa and Jan Hutton to respond to the local government questions? Thank okay. you.
If I may start with the permission, Jefferson.
Yes, you can.
And then Jan can just close it off. I think Honorable Duterte had asked the question in terms of the Integrated Urban Development Grant, whether...
Sorry, is your video open? Can you pin him? Lubabalo? I can't see her.
He was visible, Chairperson. I'm sure
he's
going to be visible. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, you can go on.
Yes, it's an answer to Honorable Tutoit on JB Marks, whether JB Marks is part of the Integrated Urban Development Grant. The answer is no. This grant, Honorable Tutoit, is by application, but also there's a pre-qualifying criteria that I think JB Marks would struggle with, because it's got quite a lot of qualifying criteria on governance issues. So the governance issues must be in order. They mustn't be qualified audit reports, and there must be stability in terms of the personnel, especially at a higher level. So no. And currently, this integrated development grant has 8 municipalities in it. Just for the honourable members to note, we've got Mhlathuze, Drakenstein, there's Mogale City, Polokwane, Renkonyeni. In the next budget, which is the 2022 budget, because none of the municipalities that are outside of the current contingent of aid have applied. And then the second question that I want to answer is the question from Honorable Okam, as well as the Honorable Chair. And I do know that Jan is going to come in here as well. In terms of the MIC, whether there are any municipalities that misuse the MIC, and what is currently being done in order to address that that issue. Honorable Chair, there are some municipalities that would obviously try their level best to circumvent the rules that have been sent to these grants. So they would use the MIG for purposes of maybe at the very worst paying for salaries. But then there's mechanism that, you know, the Treasury has in terms of recouping the funds through the equitable share, in the equitable share. But there are also other mechanisms as well, because I think the honourable members also asked in terms of in the following year, are they then penalised for that? And because the MIC is a formula-based allocation, so there are no penalties in terms of that, because we just run the formula. But for municipalities that have perpetual problems in regard to mismanagement, then there are also other avenues to then bring the districts to be able to assist in terms of delivery to ensure that the citizens are not impacted. And I think the Honourable Chair also touched on the issue, the inefficiencies within the MIC, and made an example of the stadium that was built for quite considerable amount. And it is to say, honourable members, that the MIC is one of the most elaborative frameworks in terms of the responsibilities that are bestowed in terms of the sector departments, the role that they should be playing. And unfortunately, not all sector departments play their role. So that's why you would find that in terms of the quality of the stadium that is built, for instance, you know, would not be at the level expected, because the municipalities would then need to be advised by the sector departments that would have the specs in terms of how much it would cost to build this kind of a facility. So without that, then you would find that there's variation across the municipalities in terms of the costs that are involved. It is for that reason, Honorable Chair, that together with DCOG,
you are on mute, Chair. You are on mute, Chair.
Oh. You can switch off your camera, colleague. Your network is unstable. We lost him. Can somebody help, please? Can we allow Jan to come in? Then he will come in. And Wendy, just talk to him off the platform, advise him to switch off his camera when he speaks. I think his network is not stable enough. Jan, he requested Jan to speak after him.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I can just see, check whether you can see me.
Yes, we can see you clearly.
Thanks. So I'll also switch off just to make sure that I'm audible. So, Chair, my response, I will respond to two questions. It's linking to what my colleague has started off. So the conditional grant frameworks that Parliament essentially approved as part of the Division of Revenue Bill is facilitating the framework within which municipalities are allowed to spend the grant for that intended purpose. So as part of our monitoring and oversight responsibility, Honorable Chair, we have ways in which we can detect whether municipalities use the money for the intended purpose or not. And some of those measures is the DORA allocations have to be transparently reflected in the municipal budget as a start. Secondly, it must be in the monthly in-year reports that they submit to the National Treasury and to Council. And I'm referring to Section 71 of the MFMA. And then they need to disclose this in their annual financial statements. So, Chairperson, this is where, when we consider their performance, and for instance, if they should ask for a rollover, this is where we can see and detect whether, firstly, there's sufficient cash in the bank to support that request. Secondly, as part of a disclosure in the financial statements, we can see if the money was used for the intended purpose. Chairperson, I want to give the committee the assurance, the moment we detect that a municipality uses or abuses this grant, and doesn't matter which type of grant, and if they use it for salary purposes, then we recall the full amount. And we've done that, and it's part of our institutional arrangements. Today, we also advise municipalities in the annual budget circular on the criteria that will be applicable for us as a treasury to consider rollovers or any other matters. In addition, Chair, perhaps the last part that I want to respond to is the Division of Revenue Act allows us to stop and reallocate money, and we have institutionalized that practice so that in the local government system, we do not lose the money back to the National Revenue Fund. Secondly, is to try and keep the resources within a province, because you don't want to penalize cities or the officials. And Chair, that's a very transparent process and a very consultative process. National Treasury oversee in consultative grants, like NIC, in this case, the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Chair, and we do this in consultation with the provincial treasuries and the sector departments. So everything is based on performance. And if we do get request that we can't see that there's cash to support the request and they have conformed to the requirement as per the legislation, then we use that process, Chairperson, to obviously the intention is to fast track performance, also to make sure that we allow those municipalities that is in a more advanced position from a planning perspective to utilize the money productively. But Chairperson, If we do detect that this misbehavior or bad practices, then we have used the tools that we have to our disposal to bring those municipalities to book. And it's in the form of correspondence. And if we do not get reaction, then we try to facilitate consequence management in the sense of bringing it to the attention of the accountable authorities. In this case, it would be the council of the municipality and the people that we interact with. So, Chair, I thought that's the two parts that I can add a response to. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, can I then ask Ulrika to come in again with regard to the Vaal River question that was asked? Thank you.
Okay, it's fine.
Thank you, Chair. So the rollover for the Vaal intervention contracts of the service provider, one of the service providers, and those contracts had to be ceded to the department. And to do that, they needed a deviation approval from the chief procurement officer. And there was delays in all of that. So the funds were committed, but could not be spent because the current financial year. The second component relates to invoices that the department had received and was not able to verify before and pay before the end of the financial year. And that usually takes some kind of process and it takes some time when that the work has been done to the standards set within the contract before payment was made. The department wasn't able to complete all that work before the end of the financial year, which then resulted in the funds being rolled over to the next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mema DJ, are you done as a team?
Thank you. There's just two issues still that I'll quickly touch on. The one has got to do with maintenance. And the focus is really on asset management rather than maintenance, because if you do not know what your assets are, then you don't know what to maintain. If we just show my face as per instruction, then you don't know what to maintain. So what we've done in the conditional grant frameworks and particularly focusing on MIC as well, is focusing on improving asset management practices. So the focus is there and the reforms are there and in putting in place incentives to focus on asset management and getting that in place. With regard to the drought issue, I know it's a thorny issue and we've had that discussion a number of times in this committee and we've explained exactly how the process also works, that it must be declared as a municipal disaster, a provincial disaster, or a national disaster. The applications must go through the Provincial Disaster Management Center to the National Disaster Management Center to reach the National Treasury. Only then can we just consider those requests. If those requests don't come through, unfortunately, then there's nothing to consider. So unfortunately, with regard to the request from the Northern Cape, there's nothing on the table. We haven't received anything from the National Disaster Management Center. Then with regard to the housing request or the fiscal dumping issue on the housing issue and the late gazettes, that's acknowledged. And we'll try our best to do those few things earlier so that it's not done as late as done in the past. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think we have covered all questions. Yes, Chair.
Okay.
The only question that I think we find it difficult to answer is this broader question on the capacity of the state, because that is a much bigger issue that does not only depend on treasury, because I think each department is structured in such a way that they need to be able to put the right people. So when they choose not to put the right people, it makes things quite difficult for all of us. And we are concerned, obviously, about value for money and spending. So hence, we try all kinds of initiatives to try to push in that direction. But that remains a challenge, Chair.
Okay. I think you should, as National Treasurer, note that as a concern, because it's not for the first time we raise this matter of people who are supposed to be to do work and they don't have the capacity to do the work. Hence, we find that there's a mismanagement of funds. So take that into consideration and look if you cannot use that as a condition for you to allocate money. Find a way of communicating with those people, I mean, with those institutions that you are allocating money to, because you can't just blindly give money to people you know they will not be able. You might not be in the position to know to what extent, but they should know that you are also concerned, because we are concerned as Parliament. Honourable members, do you need a Chair. Second part? Honourable Detoit?
Yes, please. Please, Chair.
Let me give Honourable Detoit first. He.
I'm covered. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Njatu.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think the last point, I think it's a very, very important point on the mismanagement, overspending, underspending. I think we can't have a situation as the committee that we always have reports on how mismanagement and underspending and overspending. I think all that comes from poor planning and also capacity. So I want to support you, Chairperson, on the point that you have made to say that when these grants are being allocated, the municipalities, the state, the departments, they must add in their proposals or their plans the capacity of implementation. So that money, when it is being allocated, is being allocated whereby the treasury already know whether that department or municipality do have the capacity to spend that money. Because it's at many instances, you will find that it's very, very huge amounts of money that is being turned back to National Treasury due to capacity and poor planning. So I want just to emphasize and to support you, Chairperson, on that point that I think going forward, it cannot be business as usual. We have to have in the plans must be indicated as to the implementation plan and the capacity of that institution. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Njatu. I think members don't want to go for a second bite. They are satisfied with the responses, but I think they are satisfied on the point that you are taking our concerns and our views very serious. And who's that? Makaringe?
Yes, Makaringe.
Okay, Makaringe.
Yeah, I will make a bite in the second phase. Can I come in?
You can.
Yeah, I wanted to make comment by asking a question regarding the presidential youth employment to check if there is a detailed plan on how this money will be spent to create employment, taking into consideration that we have got a high unemployment rate, particularly as we are coming from a rural province. The second thing is that with regard to the 6 billion that is meant to hire school assistants, I want to check whether it's for a multi-year or it's only for one financial year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you in a state to respond now, Memadi Jane Ibatlawena?
Chairperson, this is Mampo.
It's Mampo, Dr. Mampo Mudise.
Thank you, Chairperson. So quickly, just to respond, the 6 billion is for one financial year. So all the money that we have allocated for the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative is for 1 year. And they have provided all the detailed plans. And when we did the assessment, we got budget bids of up to 30 billion. And after we assessed the capacity and the ability of the departments to implement, only the 10.9, close to 11 billion was proposed for allocation. The departments have to report monthly to the presidential, to the project management office at the presidency. They do that. And we also have the statistics on the monthly expenditure and the jobs created. And in the MTBPS, I think it's page 40, where we detail the outcomes of the Presidential Employment Initiative. And I think it would be good for honorable members just to have a look and to see where these employment opportunities have been created and in which sectors. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mudise. I think honorable Makarenge was forward. I think it's because he says he will not be here for your presentation when we ask questions. Can you go on with the questions, please? I'm sorry, with your presentation. Can you flag the presentation?
Thank you so much, Chairperson, for giving us the opportunity to do the presentation. I'm just going to quickly ask Mpumelelo to go through the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you, Mpume. Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Mampo. Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening. Good evening, honorable members, and to all the meeting participants. Chairperson, I must just say up front that the storm has now made its way to Pretoria, so I'm hoping that there won't be any network disruptions, but I'll do my best to also go through the presentation as quickly as possible. In terms of what we're going to be discussing, Chair, the first part of the presentation is just a recap of the budget process and the adjustment budget process, but also the legislative provisions that govern the process. And then the last part of the presentation, that's when we will be taking you through the different adjustments that are included in the 2021-22 adjustments appropriation bill. So I think you can go to the next slide. So firstly, Chair, we just wanted to highlight as a reminder some of the different role players in the budget process. It is a very consultative process, as I'm sure members would know. Just to indicate, Chair, that at the executive level, the technical level, we have the Medium Term Expenditure Committee. That is a committee that is comprised of Directors General of selected departments in the center of government. And once departments submit their MTF submissions to the Treasury, we evaluate them, we have consultation meetings with them, and then we send a report with recommendations to the Medium Term Committee, which thereafter gets escalated to the political level, at the technical level as well, which is the Minister's Committee on the Budget Cabinet, as well as Extended Cabinet. And just to also highlight, Chair, that once the budget is, or the adjustment budget as well, is tabled, it also does go through the parliamentary process and it gets discussed for deliberation in committees like this one that we are meeting today. And then other stakeholders that are also involved in the budget process would be your Financial and Fiscal Commission. And then at the provincial level, we've got a Budget Council and then the Budget Forum, which is at the local government level. Next slide. And then, Chair, this slide is just to basically show in a graphic form how the different role players actually interact with each other in the process. Linked to what I mentioned in the previous slide, the process really starts off with the deliberations between National Treasury and departments. And we do that through initially bilateral meetings before escalating to the formal budget process through the discussions we have at functional and technical group level. I think the slide moved. Can you please go back to the previous slide? Thank you so much. And then once we are done with the technical process in Treasury with departments, and then that's when we start sending through the recommendations for consideration and ultimately approval through the different committees, starting with MTEC and then ultimately with Cabinet and the Extended Cabinet. And just to also highlight here, Chair, that we do also have other forums or committees that meet to further deliberate on issues as they relate to provinces and local government, which is the Budget Council, as well as the Budget Forum, and importantly as well, the Technical Committee on Finance. So we just wanted to show this in terms of how the different stakeholders in the budget process actually interact with each other. Thank you. You can move to the next slide. So in terms of the parliamentary process, Chair, very key as a legislative framework is the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2018. And on this slide, Chair, we're just highlighting some of the key provisions in this act that relate to the process, specifically on the adjustments budget. Section 12.2 emphasizes the fact that when we table the adjustment budget, it has to be accompanied by the adjustments appropriation bill, which is what we are discussing today. And then Section 12.15 further highlights that once the in terms of how the process flows is that the revised fiscal framework is done first, and then an adjustments appropriation bill then gets referred to the Committee on Appropriations for further consideration, and then only after that is only done after the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill is passed by Parliament. And then just in terms of Section 12.16 is to just highlight some of the standing rules which the Act provides for, and amongst those is the fact that the Committee on Appropriations needs to report on comments as well as amendments to the Adjustments Appropriation Bill. And that other committees who may want to have or make their input into the process as well need to do those in consultation with this committee and the Standing Committee on Appropriations. If you can go to the next slide, thank you. And then just to highlight as well, honorable members, Section 17 is basically I'm emphasizing the fact that the Minister of Finance must be given at least 4 days to respond to any proposed amendments to the adjustments appropriation bill. So once this process has been concluded, then the Minister of Finance has got 4 days to respond to any of the proposed amendments to the bill that would have come through this process. And then maybe just to also highlight in terms of Section 19, that the Committee on Appropriation must report to the relevant House within 30 days after the adjustment budget is actually tabled. We can move to the next slide. So here, Chair, we're just summarizing everything that I've tried to rush through in the previous slides, just to say that it's important to highlight for people who may not even be familiar with the process that Parliament firstly votes on the fiscal framework and then the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, which is what my colleagues discussed in the previous presentation, and then the appropriation bill follows from that process. That's what essentially we are trying to highlight in the slide. And just to also maybe explain again to those who may not be familiar with the different documents that we refer to when we table the adjustments budget, the fact that the fiscal framework is what provides the total resource envelope for government, and then the Division of Revenue bill is what, or the amendment bill in this particular instance, is what then talks to the distribution of resources across the three spheres of government, whilst the appropriation bill is then specific to the national level of government and looks at the distribution of resources across the 41 votes that we have. Next slide. And then in the next few slides, Chair, we're just going to be looking at specifically the adjustments budget. in the Adjustments Appropriation Bill in terms of its structure and what information is also included in the bill. And in the main, what we're highlighting on the slide is the fact that if and should there be any proposed amendments to the appropriation bill, the report of the Committee on Appropriations to the House that proposes the amendments needs to actually include certain key information. And amongst the key information that must be included is that there needs to be reasons on why the amendments are being proposed. And also, the report must also be able to demonstrate, you know, how the amendments actually take into account the broader strategic priorities and allocations of the relevant budget. And again, very key to emphasize is that the implications of the amendments must also be highlighted. Generally, when we are in a constrained fiscal environment like the one we are in now, when money is being adjusted or when there are proposals to add money to one vote, then it means that we must also be looking at in which vote are we essentially going to be taking the money away from. So this slide is just basically to just provide that high-level recap of exactly what it is that the process that governs any proposed amendments to the Adjustments Appropriation Bill. Next slide. Okay, so in terms of the different components of the adjustment budget, I won't discuss this now, Chair, because the rest of the presentation is going to be going into much more detail on some of these adjustments. But this was just to also show for noting purposes that in the adjustment budget, we've got different types of adjustments, and each one are for specific reasons. But I will touch on that when I present the slide on the specific adjustments. So you can move to the next slide. Thank you so much. And then here, Chair, we are just highlighting again the supporting documents that when we table the medium-term budget policy statement that accompany the statement, one of those is the Adjustments Appropriation Bill, which is what we is under discussion today. And in the Adjustment Appropriation Bill, we basically show the increases or decreases to the allocations for all the 41 votes that I made reference to earlier. Whilst in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, which is the previous presentation, they go into detail in terms of the adjustments to allocations to provinces and municipalities, as were set out in the Division of Revenue Act that was approved with the budget. And then we also have an adjusted estimates of national expenditure, which is a document that I would also encourage members and other meeting participants to go through if you have time, because the adjusted estimates of national expenditure basically gives a much more detailed information on some of the adjustments, but for specific departments, you will be able to see the different adjustments that have been implemented in the Adjustments Appropriation Bill per vote. And just to also say, Chair, that the adjustment budget serves to both effect the necessary changes to contribute to the in-year oversight, but as well as management. Next slide. This slide, again, if you go and look at the adjusted estimates of national expenditure, this is just to show how the information that is presented in the adjusted estimates of national expenditure is presented per vote. But also when you look at the adjustments appropriation bill, you'll also be able to find this information. So we do indicate in the adjustments appropriation bill what is the purpose of the vote. So if it's health, we say that what is the purpose of the health department? What are they mandated to do? We also then go into detail in terms of showing how their allocation is split in terms of economic classification. So we'll show what component goes to current payments and under current payments, compensation of employees and goods and services, for example. We also show the detail in terms of adjustments to payments for capital assets or any changes to buildings and other fixed structures, et cetera. So this is just to show, Chair, what the format of the Adjustments Appropriation Bill looks like. And like I indicated, Chair, all these slides, we just thought we should start off with the background and a recap of the processes so that when we talk to the adjustments, it's very easy for members and other meeting participants to understand. So now, Chair, the next few slides, I'm now going into the specific details of the adjustments that we have implemented in this in the adjustments budget that was tabled on the 11th of November. And Chair, we just wanted to show what the adjustments have had an impact when it comes to non-interest spending. And what this slide is showing, Chair, is that the net change to non-interest spending, when you compare what we tabled in the February budget with what we tabled now in the adjustments budget, is that essentially we are increasing non-interest spending by 59.4 billion. Then that is the net effect. The total increase is actually 77 billion, but because some of the increase is netted off by drawdowns from the revenue fund and the contingency reserve, then you find that the net change is then 59.4 billion. And then this 59.4 billion increase is essentially chair driven by the allocations that we've made to provinces and national departments for the wage increase that was signed earlier this year. And then also the biggest portion of it goes towards the employment program, the presidential employment program stimulus, which is what we were discussing also in the Q&A of the previous presentation. And just to also highlight, Chair, that the 32.9 billion is what we allocated in the second special appropriation bill just before we tabled the adjustments budget as well. So these are just it's just a high level summary of some of the adjustments that we have actually implemented in the appropriation, in the adjustments appropriation bill. And then, Chair, this is just again a breakdown of the 32.9 billion that we allocated in the second special appropriation bill. And to also just show in terms of what are the different elements or programs that were funded using that particular allocation. And in the main, Chair, 26.7 billion is what was allocated for the extension of the special COVID-19 social relief of distress grant until March next year. So this is the money that was provided for that purpose. And it also includes 500 million, which is actually for the administration of the grant. So in the main, that's where the bulk of the money went to. And then the other allocations were to deal with the cost implications of the riots and unrest that we had in July. So it provides for destruction money that is allocated to small businesses to help them out with repairing some of the destruction to their infrastructure that was also done as part of the July unrest. Next slide. Thank you. So this is just a summary now that's showing again a summary in terms of these adjustments that I'm going to be discussing in the next few slides. What is the impact or the net effect of the adjustments in terms of the budget? So this is what we are showing in the slide, but we're also trying to break the allocations to show how much is it actually going to departments, and then how much is going to departments, but in a form of direct charges. And we're just basically breaking down the allocations to separate and show the two allocations. And then in the next few slides, Chair, I'm going to be going through the detail now of some of the adjustments that are actually included in the adjustments appropriation bill. So the first type of adjustments that's provided for in section 32 of the PFMA is what we call significant and unforeseeable economic and financial events. And here, Chair, there's about 20.5 billion that is allocated. And this is essentially the money that we are allocating to provinces and national departments for implementation of the 2021-22 wage bill. As you noted in the previous presentation, Chair, 14.9 billion of that went to provinces, and then the rest is what we have allocated to national departments. And then the bulk of that goes to the police, because obviously in terms of the number of personnel, they've got quite a significant number, which is why they are getting a bigger share of the allocation. But the money is actually split in terms of the different departments based on the number of employees that they actually have. You can go to the next slide. Okay, so the other type of adjustments that the adjustments appropriation bill provides for is what we call unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, which is in terms of section 61A of the 2021 Appropriation Act. So UNU, as we famously call it, is basically expenditure that we could not anticipate at the time of the budget. So this type of budget adjustment essentially provides for expenditure that just materialized in the course of the year that we could not have foreseen at the time of the budget. And it's very important that when a department submits a request for unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure, it has to meet both criteria. So it must be both unforeseen and unavoidable. If it's unforeseen but avoidable, then it would not meet the criteria. So with this specific type of adjustment, we are allocating money to those type of expenditure that could not be avoided and was unforeseen for departments. And in the main, in the adjustments appropriation bill, money was allocated to vote 5, which is home affairs, and vote 40, which is transport for unforeseen and unavoidable. So they are the two departments that received money. And then you can go to the next adjustment. Okay. And then we also have an adjustment, which is what we call expenditure that was earmarked in the 2021 budget speech. So in the 2021 or the February budget, we earmarked about 11 billion for the presidential employment program stimulus. So this is just basically showing the breakdown of the allocation in terms of the different departments and how much they have been allocated for their different employment programs. And just to also maybe highlight here that the total is not 11 billion, but just over 13 billion, only because also part of the allocation that's included here is the 2.3 billion that is going to help for the purchasing of vaccines. So in the previous presentation, we had a detailed discussion on this particular program. So this is just to show you at national level, specifically where some of the money was allocated and also what are the type of employment programs that are being implemented by these departments. Hence, they've been allocated the money. So as Dr. Mampo indicated, they submitted the plans, and from the departments who had submitted the plans, these are the programs that were selected to receive the funding. You can go to the, I think you can skip this slide, I've covered it, but it's just showing the list of departments again at national level and just noting the 6.5 billion that was allocated to provinces. Okay, then the other form of adjustment which we have, which was also touched on in the previous discussion, is rollovers. Now, rollovers is funds that could not have been spent in the previous financial year, although the department had contracted. In other words, they had the contract, they were going to spend the money, but for some reason, certain things happened which led to the money not being spent in the previous financial year, and therefore the department, because it's got a commitment, they want to spend the money in the new financial year. But like with what I indicated with unforeseen and unavoidable adjustments as well, with rollovers, they are specific requirements, or there is a set criteria that a department needs to meet in order for the expenditure to qualify to be rolled over. And basically the restrictions that we have for rollover, in other words, we do not roll over money for compensation of employees because there is no contractual agreement that you can say that you could not have paid the compensation of employees in the previous year, hence you want to roll it over. And also for goods and services, we do have a limit that irrespective of how much your budget is, we do not roll over more than 5% of goods and services. And in those instances where we roll it over, then it gets treated as a deviation. And then just to also note as well, when it comes to transfers and subsidies, we do not roll over funds for transfers and subsidies that were allocated for a specific purpose for a different purpose. Because again, the reason why we roll over the money is because it's a continuation of work that you were doing in the previous financial year. So therefore, you cannot roll it over in the new financial year for a different purpose than what the money was allocated for in the previous financial year. So this is just to provide the background in terms of the rollovers and to note that they are governed in terms of Treasury Regulation 6.4. And then in the next slide, Chair, we do provide a list of all the departments who made requests to roll over money. And we also show how much was allocated to each of those departments. So this is just a list to show you all the different departments that received 1 billion. I think this is the highest rollover we had, was to the police because of certain payments that could not be implemented for Polmed in the previous financial year, as well as some of its other work in the detective services environment. Then we also have some rollover to Statistics South Africa, about 413 million that was specific for the census. So this is again, Chair, just to show how much we are rolling over for each of the different departments. You can go to the next slide. Okay, then another form of adjustment is what we call self-financing. So self-financing is basically revenue that a department generates as part of its normal activities. So therefore, when they are rendering a service, they would then be getting payment from the public for the service that they render. And I think a very simple example of self-financing is Home Affairs. When we go to take out, to request a passport or an ID in the Department of Home Affairs, we pay a fee for that. Home Affairs collect that money, and then as part of the adjustments budget, they then apply for what we call self-financing. And with self-financing, the departments basically ask to retain that money. And the reason why we allow them to retain the money is so that they can actually reinvest into the operations that resulted in them earning the money anyway. So instead of providing new money from the fiscus for Home Affairs to continue rendering the service of IDs and passports, when they make the submission as part of the adjustment budget, we allow them to retain the revenue so that it can be reinvested in their operations. And it's not just Home Affairs that generally charges services, but also, you know, reinvest the money into the operations. You also have Defence and GCIS, as well as Correctional Services, that had requests for self-financing. So Table 8 is just showing where the money essentially, or which departments we gave approval to retain the revenue that they generated. And then the next slide. So this is declared unspent funds. So with declared unspent funds, and I know this is sometimes very controversial to say, why would a department come in here and say to the National Treasury that actually we're not going to spend this money by the end of the financial year, therefore we are giving it back to you? So these are the departments who, when they have, as part and parcel of their expenditure monitoring and monitoring of their infrastructure project, as an example, would have identified that because of certain delays that occurred in the first 6 months of the financial year, they were not able to, or they will most likely not spend the full allocation for specific programs that were allocated funding. And therefore, as part of the adjustment budget, they come to the National Treasury and they declare what we call declared unspent funds. So these are the departments that in the 2021 Adjustments Appropriation Bill had declared unspent funds. As you will note from this slide, the biggest unspent funds was from Transport, Vote 40. And this was essentially because of delays in the implementation of the MyCT Phase 2A extension project in the city of Cape Town. So that's why, because the money will not be spent in the current financial year, the department then came forward and declared some unspent savings there. So this is what essentially we wanted to show in this slide. And then what we also do as the National Treasury, because we do monitor expenditure by departments on a monthly basis, is that when we do the adjustment budget, we also, in terms of our analysis, do also assess how much will, based on the department spending trends, how much will they most likely underspend by the end of the financial year? So that is what that projected underspending for national government that you see as well, an amount of 3.8 billion. It does not mean that it will be realized, but based on our analysis of how departments have spent in the first 6 months. So this is what we are projecting that might to be underspent. And then the last set of vironments, Chair, or last set of adjustments is what we call vironments and shifts. And I'm just providing the information on this slide also for background purposes, because very often we get asked the question, why is it that departments are moving money between programs and who gave them approval for that? So what we specifically wanted to show in this slide and the next few slides, Chair, that I'm going to be presenting, is those environments or shifts that departments have implemented, but for which the National Treasury or the Minister of Finance is not authorized to give them approval, and only Parliament can actually give them approval. So in terms of Section 5.1 of the Appropriation Act 2021, it does give the Minister of Finance, in order to expedite service delivery, certain authority to approve some of the shifts. And then there are those shifts that the Minister of Finance is not authorized to approve, which is what then we include in the Adjustments Appropriation Bill so that they can be considered as part
of this process for approval by Parliament. So essentially, the Section 5.1 of the Appropriation Act empowers the Minister of Finance to approve those vehements where a department wants to move money from compensation of employees, but it notes that that is for when it's for specifically for severance or exit packages. But if a department wants to move money for compensation of employees for any other purpose than what Section 5.1A is actually saying, then that vehement can only be approved by the legislature. Similarly, the Minister of Finance can approve vehements that are related to goods and services for them to be used within the same vote, as well as for payments for capital assets and payments for financial assets. But very important, Chair, to highlight in terms of Section 5.2, that the Minister is not authorized to approve any shifting of money from goods and from transfers and subsidies, payments for capital assets and payments for financial assets, if in fact the money is being used for compensation of employees. Only the legislature can approve that. And similarly, in terms of Section 5.3, the Minister of Finance is only authorized to approve up until the 8%. Any vehements that are above 8%, then they have to be approved by the legislature. So the next few slides, Chair, you can move to the next slide. It's just to show those specific vehements that only the legislature is authorized to approve. If we look at Vote 8, which is the National Treasury, they are moving money. There are total vehements for Program 3. Is actually 11.7%. So because it's more than 8%, then only Parliament can approve these vehements. So that's why we wanted to highlight those specific vehements to the committee that can only be approved by the legislature. So this is the National Treasury's proposed vehements for consideration by the legislature. Then you can go to the next slide. In the interest of time, Chair and Honourable Members, I won't go through some of the vehements that, and the different types of vehements that we have that require the legislature's approval. In the case of basic education, they are moving money from a conditional grant, which is specifically and exclusively appropriated. So those type of vehements can only be approved by the legislature, which is why this particular vehement from the Department of Basic Education would require the legislature's approval. Next slide. I think the next slide should be higher education as well. So higher education, here is an example of a department that's moving money from compensation of employees. But unlike what the Minister of Finance is authorized to approve in terms of Section 5.1A of the Appropriation Act 2021, here they are moving money from compensation of employees to transfers and subsidies. And therefore, the Minister of Finance is not authorized to approve the vehement.
Excuse me. Members and all participants, please mute your mics without disrupting the presenter. Back to you. I'm sorry about that.
No problem, Chair. Thank you so much. So this was just to show an example of a vehement where a department is moving money from compensation of employees for other purposes. It requires the approval of the legislature, which is why we are highlighting it in this presentation. Next slide. So the next slide shows Vote 18, which is the Department of Health. The Department of Health has several vehements that require the legislature's approval. They are moving money essentially from indirect grants, which are allocated under goods and services, to direct grants that are allocated under transfers and subsidies. So that's why they are requesting the legislature's approval for those particular shifts. And then also they are moving money above 8%. Their vehement in Program 2 is actually 23%, which is why this then would require the legislature's approval.
Hi, ma'am.
You can go to there. I think someone is still not muted, Chair.
Oh, no. Kimang, Aling Shab. We don't want to hear that. Please,
there is Mr. Makamboya.
Just reminded you, honorable members and participants, colleagues, to mute your mics. Don't abuse our ears to hear what we are not supposed to hear, please. Continue.
Thank you so much, Chair. And then the next vironment is from the Department of Justice. It's also a vironment that's above 8%. Hence, it requires the legislature's approval. You can go to the next slide. And then the vironment for the police, this is also a different vironment because in the case of the police, they're actually moving money from payments for capital assets and they are moving it to compensation of employees. As I indicated, Section 5.2 of the Appropriation Act actually does not empower or authorize the Minister of Finance to approve vironments where a department is moving money from payments for capital assets to compensation of employees. This is why then the vironment from the Department of Police actually requires the legislature's approval. And also because they are moving money to compensation of employees, which is therefore increasing their compensation of employees ceiling, that also requires the legislature's approval because compensation of employees is specifically and exclusively appropriated. So this is why this particular vironment would also require the legislature's approval. Next slide. And then communications and digital technologies, they are moving money more than 8% in program two. Again, because it's more than 8%, this therefore requires the approval of the legislature. Next slide. Department of Environmental Affairs, like what I indicated with health, they are also moving money from conditional grants that are specifically and exclusively appropriated, and therefore those vironments require the legislature's approval. So that's why we are highlighting them here as well. And then with mineral resources, they also are moving money from funding that is specifically and exclusively appropriated, which is therefore why these vironments require the approval of the legislature. And then I think the next one is the last one should be DSI. Yes, science and innovation. They also have a few vironments where they are moving money from transfers and subsidies in one program to transfers and subsidies in another program. And the Minister of Finance is not authorized to approve shifts in transfers and subsidies if they are not within the same program. Because they're essentially moving money from transfers and subsidies in one program to another, this requires the legislature's approval. And this is why we have included it here. Thank you. You can move to the next slide. Oh, small business. I had forgotten about small business. They are moving more than 8% in program one. And this is why this particular vironment requires the legislature's approval. And then I think the next slide. Okay, tourism as well is a vironment above 8%. So this would also require the legislature's approval for the reasons that I've mentioned before. And then we also have trade, industry, and competition. All their vironments in program three, six, and I think it's 10 are vironments that are above 8%. So they would require the legislature's approval. And that's why we have included them here. And then lastly, Chair, this is the final slide. We just wanted to show that once you have done and we've shifted all of this money across the different departments. This is the net effect essentially on the allocation for 2021-22. But we also thought it might be important to show you in terms of how it impacts the different functions. So even after these vironments and adjustments, the biggest share of the allocation is still going towards the social wage. So your learning and culture, which is where higher education and basic education are funded, continue to receive the bulk of the allocation as well as health and social development as well. So this is just to show Chair and Honourable Members the net change of all the adjustments that I've just presented. Previous slide. Of the presentation. Thank you so much for your attention.
So I start
recording in progress.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you to National Treasury for this comprehensive report. Honorable Chair, one question, vote 28, police. I know that there was an additional allocation towards police for the additional expenses that was incurred as a result of the July 2021 unrest in KZN and Gauteng. I want to know from National Treasury, are there any funds in the pipeline that might be allocated in the new budget year to fill up this shortfall that will be incurred with the movement of funds from construction and upgrading of police station to salary wage overtime payments? As we all know, that police stations are falling apart as we speak, and I think this is something that must receive urgent attention. If we can just get more information on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have only one hand? Lubabalo?
Yes, Chairperson. Only a
Dr. Mampo, it seems you were clear in making your presentation. You spoke to our issues that we have been raising all along. Dr. Mampo and the team.
Oh, the honorable members are tired.
They're never tired. They're used to this. Honorable Njadu, before Dr. Mudise.
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I only want point that I would want to check on is on the rollovers in terms of the unspent for capital projects and for completion. In terms of the monitoring of National Treasury, how specific is that in terms of the effectiveness of the monitoring of those projects which are in terms of the, because I remember one municipality last year, monies was returned back to Treasury or was given to another municipality where I think something like 5 billion was not spent in that project and they could not complete it due to planning and capacity. And I just want to understand as to how effective can one manage that, make sure that municipalities or institutions are not reporting at the last point to say that we cannot spend this money, and then now money need to be removed to another municipality or back to National Treasury. I just want to check in terms of how one can be more hands-on in terms of that type of exercise. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Njato. I think the presentation was very clear. You have said so much on the issue of environment, which is something that I always had a problem with. And I think it's something that provinces and national, different departments, spheres of departments, they have to understand as to which environment are they allowed to implement and which one needs the approval of Treasury at a provincial level or national level, or which one needs the legislature or parliament. Difference is really necessary, because in most cases people do as they wish, but it's not something that I think Treasury or ourselves were just concerned about. It is also something that is in the PFMA. That you can only, you are only allowed to move to a certain extent. So if that can be made clearly, and provinces can also assist in terms of making sure that they oversee that departments seek permission from yourselves, your good selves as legislatures, for the relevant amount before they can do the environment. The rollovers, I think you can only roll over if there's a commitment. But if there's no commitment, you didn't just spend money, and or you have started the project, you didn't finish the project, or it's a multi-year project, that is understandable. But for something that you have not even started, I don't know. I need to be corrected by you, Dr. Mampo, and your team, as people who have the better knowledge of the finances and legislations that are related to finances. My understanding is that you can only allow rollovers if there's a certain commitment that is justifiable. Thank you. Over to you, Dr. Mampo, Modise, and the team.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me start where you ended in terms of rollovers. You're absolutely right. The criteria that we use for rollovers is so stringent to avoid a situation where departments are applying to rollover fund because of inefficiencies and to avoid fiscal dumping. So basically, Chairperson, the considerations that we make in terms of the rollovers. Firstly, we look at rollovers for payments for capital assets, and we are rolling over funds there to finalize the project or asset acquisitions that is still in progress. We don't roll over money for capital assets on a normal basis. Transfers and subsidies, unspent fund may not be rolled over for a purpose other than what it is intended for. We also look at current payments where there's a maximum of 5% of the department's payments for goods and services that we can roll over. And those mainly, Chairperson, would be, for example, if a department has procured computers and they were busy finalizing the invoices and we can see that they've already made a commitment, that would be what we would be rolled over. We do not really roll over money for recurring expenditure, so we can't roll over money for compensation or for paying off security buildings because that is recurring. We normally do not provide rollovers for monies that are small relative to budget where we think the department can reprioritize within the baselines. We also try not to provide these rollovers for expenditure that is not ready for payment. So if by the close of the financial year you're not ready for payment, then we will not consider a rollover. In terms of the monitoring of the infrastructure projects, Chairperson and honourable members, we do that through the IYM, monthly from the department, and we also present to the Standing Committee on Appropriation on a quarterly basis on the spending patterns of these departments. I can, of course, share an example of the latest report and the presentation that we did for the Standing Committee on Finance so that honourable members can see the information that we present. I will definitely share that with the Chairperson. Honourable members, in terms of the new funding or proposals for police, I think this is a very difficult conversation because the spending pressures do not only emanate from the police. I mean, the recent budget reductions have had an implication on the different budgets for departments. So we ran a budget process throughout the year since June. And there has been a lot of budget requests from different departments. And what we have done is that we have proposed to Mincom Bad and to Cabinet some of the spending pressures that we think should be considered for funding. And as the Minister of Finance said in the MTBPS, the finalization of those allocations will be presented at the time of the budget. But what I want to say is that the July unrest have shown us that funding for the security cluster is critical, and we definitely are looking into that. But as I say, the outcomes of the budget requests will be tightened now and then will be published at the time of the budget. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Mdise. Honourable members, afterthought. I don't usually take afterthought. Okay. Mr. Jan Hatton.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to respond to the second question. So the rules for national provincial government are exactly the same, and it's articulated in the Public Finance Management Act. So although we've presented to this House the National Adjustment Budget, but the same process is applied by provincial treasuries in the provincial context. The rollover process for local government, Honorable Chair, is regulated by the Municipal Finance Management Act. Again, the same set of rules, the same set of practices. But when it comes to provinces and municipalities, there's a simple concept. The concept is, did the cash leave the National Revenue Fund, or was the cash still with the National Revenue Fund? So even if we've made a transfer to provinces and to municipalities, it's subject to a similar process, Chairperson. And you are correct. The Division of Revenue Act talks about a firm commitment prior to the end of the financial year. And if a provincial department or a municipality conform to that requirement as part of the process that we run for provincial and local government rollovers, the same principles apply. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Karen. Is up.
Chairperson, sorry. Yeah. Yes. No, I'm having problems with my, it's also freezing. But I mean, freezing in the sense that it's not opening up. But look, very quickly, two observations, right? Nothing profound. One is, look, this rollover story, we've raised this for thousands of years, right? So, okay, rollovers occur. But some of these rollovers are hugely damaging to the country's infrastructure and service delivery needs. And we keep saying to Treasury, and perhaps they do answer, and we have an incremental growth of responses to our questions over the years. It's also a reflection on us as national sphere of government and parliament, okay? That people don't have the capacity at provincial and local government level. They may not be technically proficient and competent enough. Who knows? Whatever it is, surely Treasury should do far more. They do a lot, but surely they should do far more to invest those provinces and municipalities with greater capacity. You know, we keep talking about moving some of the senior officials in the public. So how long is Geraldine Fraser Moleketi? Can you remember thousands of years ago she was the minister? At that stage, she raised this thing of moving DGs and so on. And then I remember I was in a local government sphere and we said, okay, you've got to make parallel the or commensurate the salaries, because you move a DG to a small rural municipality, they may not be able to pay. What has happened to all of that? We are one sphere of one cooperative system of governance across three spheres. We're not a federal system, please. The DA and others like to think that, but, you know, okay, they're welcome to think that, as they are that the moon, you know, comes out in the middle of a day, okay? That's their right. This is democracy. But we are one unit, one cooperative governance system with three distinct and interrelated spheres and interdependent, interrelated, interdependent. What is Treasury really doing to ensure that rollovers in crucial areas are reduced substantially by investing enough capacity? Secondly, Chairperson, it is a delight for an old dinosaur like me. I'm not even a dinosaur, I'm old. To see, it's such a breath of fresh air. Okay, there are two oldies there, but for the rest, you know, even now, you know, not just this meeting, but other meetings, you're seeing a new crop of people, most of whom are women. And it's wonderful, really, Chairperson. I must say that, really. And you will know, having served in the standing committee for those 5 years, well, apart from the change of the DG, we're seeing the same old faces. Do you remember? Now in the last 2-3 years, suddenly a flush of new faces. Every time somebody new pops up, and what should warm your heart and those of us who are gender sensitive males is that they're women, and it demythologizes this gender and racial stereotypes about who's cut out to deal in this important sphere. I don't like their overall approach necessarily, Chair. And I have some difficulties with the overall policy and the level of arrogance that was raised previously. But the truth of the matter is, as you listen to him today, you're struck once again by how technically competent this department is, how sophisticated for an emerging democracy, a developing society, the system is of how you allocate or how you allow rollovers, how you move money from one program to another, how you do the division. It's really quite remarkable. I wish with all this technical capacity and all the sophisticated legislation, we could implement even one-tenth of the potential that that legislative and capacity potentially provides for. But having said that, thank you. We're running out of time. I'm sorry to make a speech, and it's 1950, and I also got to leave for 20, as do others. So I'll stop here. I don't want a long reply. I just want to say goodbye.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. I see the hand of Arona. Arona, your hand is up.
No, thanks, Chair. Honorable Mutswana from the Northwest.
Oh, okay, Honorable Mutswana. I couldn't read. Yeah, I'm struggling with my eyes here. Sorry about that, okay. Honorable Mutswana.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I just wanted to add my voice on this issue of the rollover and maybe concentrating too much on the municipal sphere. What then my view is in terms of that, Chair, is that as Honorable Yunis Karim rightfully put, your issue of capacity for me is not much of a bigger problem. I believe, and I'm until proven otherwise, there is capacity. There is people appointed in various spheres of government, either as senior managers, as directors, at the level of your CFO and accounting officers. You look at qualifications, you look at the level of experience wherein some of these people has actually served in government and so on. For me, it appears, Chair, that over the years, yes, of course, we continue to say support must be given, a capacity must be built. And when you interview these individuals, you can then hear that and come to a conclusion. It will not be difficult to put before council records that would show that these are capable people with the requisite skills and capacity and knowledge to can then disperse of what is required in terms of legislation. Now, for me, the problem becomes wherein people then have the appetite to fill their pockets in whatever form, whether you call it corruption, maladministration, and so on and so on. Because, Chair, it takes about 90 days just to do an exercise of procurement. 90 days split, 3 months, the least you are done. Bid committees, but in the process, whether it's at the provincial government or at the local level, many other things will crop up there in the process, and you end up with a situation where, say, like the utilization of your MIG, a project have been identified through the IDP, and so on and so on. A smaller municipality that consists of 20 wards, and it is given a MIG funding of about 100 million. And that particular municipality is confronted by many, many challenges. And the municipality does not get to spend the entire money to the extent that they apply for the rollover. When you look at the fundamental reasons given, it would be that bid committees could not see it. They could not do 1, 2, 3, 4. For me, it is a question of people not wanting to do what is required in terms of legislation. That's what then propels us to, at the end of the day, having to then apply for rollovers. The other reason, Chair, that I think exacerbate this matter is the inability or the lack of will to take corrective measures against the affected officials and so on and so on. To a great extent, people would say whether it's in the provincial government and some interference by politicians. But for me, it's not the truth, because there are many ways in which administrators can still perform their functions without having to be influenced otherwise. Now, the last point, Chair, maybe not to take too much of your time. Treasury at the same time is found wanting in terms of this, because in an attempt to try to regulate this particular process, Treasury would come up with all kinds of unending legislation, regulations that would attempt to try to block such that monies must not be mismanaged and so on. You look at the sphere of local government. It is highly regulated. It will take many, many years for people to understand, because there's new regulations that are being introduced almost every day at that particular level of our sphere. So I think that somewhere, somehow, Honorable Yunus Karim is quite correct to then say, but what is it that you as Treasury supposed to do to then try to come up with a uniformity in order to ensure that the system becomes simple and not complex, in order to allow that there should be spending, and spending must then be done in accordance to what has been submitted as the needs of a specific department or a municipality. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutswana. Dr. Mundise and the team.
Yo, Chairperson. And the honorable members have raised so many issues. Some of them are outside of my capacity, because regulations and legislation will form part of the Accountant General and the Office of the OCPO. But I mean, the one thing that I can appreciate is the compliments that we've received. I mean, it makes us want to work even harder. I think what we will have to do, Chairperson, we will just have to share with the Secretariat the criteria that we use in terms of the rollover, so that the committee can see the stringent criteria that we have. So we avoid a situation, Chairperson, where we do budgeting using rollover processes. So most of the time, as I say, what we roll over, you find that the applications for rollovers are close to 20 billion, and only 2 billion is approved for rollovers, precisely because of the stringent criteria that we use. But we can definitely share the criteria that we use, so that honorable members can have a sight of what is rolled over and why we would roll over something like that. So that is the information that we will definitely share with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. I think it will be good that you share that information with the Secretariat, and then the Secretariat will share with the honorable members and the provinces. Don't you need any other member of your team to comment? Not to make a speech, by the way, just to comment, because it looks like you have answered all the questions, unless members feel that their questions were not fully answered. Can I first check with the members?
Chairperson, I think Dr. Modisi and the team are tired. We were accused of that.
So, you're saying
about 45 minutes ago, half an hour ago, we accused of that.
Switch off your mic.
Tit for tat.
Switch off your mic.
Are you being authoritarian, but fine.
Dr. Mudise, I thought it's you who is answering the phone.
No, it's not me, Chairperson.
I thought it was Honorable Karim.
We're not tired, Honorable members. And
I was just teasing you, Dr. Mudise, just teasing you. I withdraw what I said. That's not my fault, Chairperson. It was the phone, the silent thing didn't. Got pushed up by my finger. Accidentally.
Dr. Mudise and the team is fine. Honorable members, tired, because you are used to having meetings that start at 9. So you start from 7 until late in the evening or in the night. So, honorable members, I think we have dealt with items that are very important. My network now is becoming unstable. So before we go to minutes, I see Lubabalo wants to say something, because I wanted you, Lubabalo, before we release members from provinces, for you to make an announcement in terms of what is expected of us and them next week, this process of division of revenue. But I see you want to say something. You can say what you wanted to say and then address what I ask you to address thereafter.
Thank you, Shetase. No, I wanted to remind you about the last item.
About what?
About the last item, adoption of consideration, adoption of minutes, Chair.
Yeah, no, we'll come to that. We have to release the members first who are not part of the committee, and also check if we are correcting to can deal with those minutes.
Okay, thanks. Chairperson, next week on Wednesday, members will be briefing the provinces on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, and thereafter, then provinces will facilitate the issue of negotiating mandates, which we'll consider on Thursday, then final mandates on Friday, Chairperson. So, yes, that's what I can...
Thank you. Those provinces that are here and honourable members, we know we all represent our provinces. We are expected to go and seek mandate, negotiated mandate, and report back on Thursday. But please, provinces, communicate with your chairpersons, those who are here, and the relevant authority in terms of your legislature, the speakers, so that you have a sitting for us to finalize the report on Friday. The final mandate and the report, we must do it on Friday. So remember, this is a Section 76 matter. So we have time frame. We can't do as we wish. So thank you very much, Lubabalo. How many members are still on the platform? We can now release honorable members from the provinces and the team treasury, other colleagues, and only members of the committee can remain, and the support staff of the appropriations, select committee on appropriations. Thank you very much and keep well. Take care. How many members do we correct?
We do form a quorum. We have 6 members, Chair.
Honorable Okamp, you wanted to say you don't courage.
I want to say I'm here. We courage. Let's carry on. Thank you.
Okay. Can we you flag the first set of the minutes? How many sets? Is one only one set, ne? Lubabalo?
Okay, sorry, Chairperson. No, it's only 3 sets, Chairperson.
Oh,
yes.
I saw one. Okay. The first one.
The first one, Chairperson, is dated 16 November. It was the briefing by the ministerial briefing, which was led by the deputy minister after we received an apology. For the minister.
Okay, can you move to the next one? The next page. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6, page 7. Page 8. And that's the last page. This is the last page, honorable members. Can I get a mover?
I move, Chairperson.
Thank you, honorable Karim. A seconder?
I second, Chair.
Thank you, honorable Njatu. I think we agree this is the true reflection of the discussion of the day on the 16th. The next set?
The next set, Chairperson, is the meeting that we held on the 16th again in the evening. It was
in
a briefing by
yes.
the PBO and FFC.
Okay. Page 1. Two. Those, the two pages are attendees. Page 3, still attendees. It was well attended. Eh? An introduction. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8, adjournment. Okay, this is the last page of the minutes. Can I get a mover? Can I get a mover, Chair, for the adoption?
After all, everything is clear, Chair, I move for adoption. Jadu.
Okay, Honorable Jadu is moving. The seconder?
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Okam. The next set, the last set.
The last set, Chairperson, it was a...
It's on the 17th.
Yes, over to you, Chair.
Yes, sorry. Thank you. Sorry. Okay, no, it's fine. Let's go to page 2. These are attendees. Continuation of attendees and introduction. There you go. Page 3. Let's go to page 4. That's the last page on the screen. Can I get a mover? Honorable Eunice Karim is moving. A seconder? Where's Honorable to do it?
I'm here, Chair. Luba Balo, could you just move up a little bit, please? I just want to check the previous page.
Okay.
I saw my name. Okay, there we go. Yes, we can approve, Chair. I'm seconding. Thank you.
On conditions that your name appears.
No.
Thank you very
much.
Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. We have come to the end of our meeting. Nel Babalo, that was the last item.
That's correct, Chairperson. Maybe just a reminder, Chair, before you close, that the next meeting is on Tuesday. The committee will be consulting with SALGA. Then we'll have public hearings on the revenue amendment.
Yeah, next week we will be having marathon back-to-back meetings every day from Tuesday until Friday. So I'm sure members are aware of the program, and we also understand that this time of the year, every year, it's hectic for us as appropriations. So we will be equal to the task. And we hope that we'll also get the necessary cooperation from the provinces so that we are not left frustrated. I want to thank you, honorable members, for being able to attend until this time and participated actively. So your inputs are very much welcomed and appreciated. Please take care of yourselves and your families and those around you. until we meet again on Tuesday. Thank you very much. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.